Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And good evening. Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. If you have video, you're looking at Tom and Melissa Gould. I'm Bob Ginsberg. Marta Kristen was trying to co-host with us, and she's trying to iron out some technical difficulties, so she may pop in as well. And how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Great. Great to see you, Bob, and hope we do get to see Marta.
Yeah, we should. She's trying.
Good.
Yeah, when I was trying to help her through all the setting up the internet and the TV and all that stuff, and I'm, as you both know, I'm not the world authority on that stuff. So it's like the blind leading the blind. Plus, she has a Mac and I'm a PC, so I was lost there too. So. Let's see. Before we get started, wanted to mention that we have seats available for our October retreat in California. It's October, I think, 17th, and it's for parents who lost children. So those things sell out quickly, so we hate turning people away. So if you want to come, go on the website and make your reservations. We can, as I mentioned, this is the show where we answer your questions. That's it. I mean, that's the format. Some people have emailed us, and some people like to call in. If you want to call in, the number here is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. So if you'd like to call in, we would love to talk to you. So let's begin. I hear that Marta's still having some issues, so we'll see what happens. Let's see. We have the first question, kind of a long one, but I'll read it. Is it possible to have vivid dreams and visions of scenes taking place in other parts of the world, or even in other dimensions? I often have vivid images involving people or environments I don't recognize, and yet they feel incredibly real. They could be past lives, but sometimes they feel more like parallel lives my soul is visiting. Once I had a vivid dream where I visited another planet. My presence was noticed by an extraterrestrial being who looked me straight in the eyes. I can assure you it was very real. Even though I was there only in spirit, he sensed me and held eye contact for a few seconds. This same thing has happened to me while meditating, except I was seen straight through the eyes by a wolf in the middle of a forest. I was traveling as a tiny entity of light and floating in the air when the wolf sensed me. It felt very real. Could we be capable of existing in multiple dimensions at the same time? Could our souls have access to other physical bodies while we're living in a human experience? And can our soul travel when we are in a subconscious state? And she ends by, should I be worried of having these visions and dreams? I don't know anybody who can relate, and I'm even afraid to ask. Well, those were three questions right there.
Wow, a lot to unpack.
All I can say is yes, but I have no explanation.
Well, I imagine if you can have a vivid dream where you're visited by spirit, and we know those happen, then those, you can expand on those. And also, we know that there's remote viewing where people in a conscious state can leave their bodies and go see someplace else on the planet and report back accurately. So I don't see that in a subconscious state of dream that you couldn't do the same going to even other planets. And then the other question is a big yes, that yes, your soul can inhabit more than just your one body at the same time. You can have other physical existences within the scope of your own soul.
Yeah, and the question, you know, can our soul travel when we're in a subconscious state? To me, that's saying that can our consciousness travel, while we're in a subconscious state? And as Tom said, sure, you know, it can be many places at once, and that's when it seems to travel, when we're, you know, when we're not overthinking things and we just sort of let go and get into an altered state. What about Melissa? What would you say? Should she be worried about having these visions and dreams?
No, I'd say embrace them. That's remarkable. And what a gift, actually, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
To be that in touch with your soul on a conscious level is quite unique and a wonderful thing, I think.
Yeah. Right. Lucky occurrences for her.
So she should be thrilled and not worried.
Yes.
I think so.
And maybe find, I don't know if there are any tips or tricks that can be shared, how to get to that state. I mean, I know we've all studied and read about experiences like that, how to make them happen. But I haven't actually tried in quite a while, probably in our earlier studies.
Yeah. Well, there have been many books written on lucid dreaming.
Yeah.
And I think some are on our recommended reading list. So it might be worth picking those up because it does give you practical advice of going out of, not only going out of body, but going out of body while you're dreaming. I mean, lucid dream, you're aware that you're dreaming, but you're within the dream and you could interact with it. Pretty, you know, incredible. I think we've all had, whether we realize it or not, lucid dreams at some point. It's definitely, if nothing else, you know, good practice.
I just wanted to share it just made me think of a dream I once had, seeing my dad. And he was surrounded by a group of people, which I sort of picture him because he was the kind of man who was always out to try to save the world and help the world. And when I saw him in my dream, I didn't speak to him. Instead, I thought, oh, I've got to go find Bob and Fran and ask him what I should ask. Ask them what I should ask Dad. And that was, I felt like that was a lucid dream.
Yeah, that definitely was a lucid dream.
I had a friend years ago who said that he could lucid dream anytime he wanted to, and I was intrigued by that. And so I practiced a little myself and was able a couple of times. And one of the things that, whether I read it or he told me or something, is that when you're in a dream and you think that you're dreaming, what you should do is you should read something. If you have a newspaper or anything, read it. Then look away and look back and it won't be the same. And then you know you're in a dream. And once that triggers that, oh, I'm not in a dream, then you're free. What I usually would like to do, well, if I'm dreaming, I'm gonna fly somewhere. So I used it for that to fly.
Cool.
I think I've seen you a couple of times like in the sky. Well, that's also possible, you know. I can share experiences. Yeah,
not a bird, not a plane. It's
it's Tom. Catherine writes, "I'm often hurt by the harsh or stern tones of people's voices when they're speaking to me. When we are in spirit form on the other side and communicate with our thoughts, will those thoughts all be conveyed neutrally? Or might they sometimes seem angry or annoyed?" So I think it's natural for us to think that people can be annoyed on the other side. I think people that have lost loved ones also worry about that. You know, are they angry? But everything seems to point to the fact that once you're on the other side, anger disappears.
Yeah.
You know, so you're immersed in this atmosphere, you know, of love and thought and compassion, and the human emotions of anger don't exist anymore. So I don't think that they're annoyed. I mean, sometimes they might regret certain things and try to make it better and communicate to you that they're sorry, you know, for certain things. But I don't know, what do you guys think?
I would hope that feelings, especially as you mentioned, if they had been that type of person in this physical world, that they're gentler now.
Yeah.
I know we hear that their personalities come through, but maybe it's more a description of speaking as the spirit, how I once was.
Right.
And I regret, or I'm sorry for the way I may have made you feel, but I'm viewing things differently now.
Yeah, the studies that I've read about and the people I've even talked to have had near-death experiences, pretty much across the board, they're struck immediately with that sense of, as Bob mentioned before, of love and compassion, that you feel the love more than anything. And yes, where you may have had problems in your human existence that were not in keeping with the love and compassion, and that you might have to answer to and or even come back to Earth to work on, those are pointed out again as like a teacher would tell a student if they get something wrong. They wouldn't be angry with them. They would just guide them towards the right answer. And I think that's what you'll get on the other side from other spirit is guidance. Hey, Marta's here.
Hello.
You're muted still, Marta. There you go.
Hi.
Hey, there she is.
Oh, my God.
We've all been.
Marta Kristen Kane, star of screen and stage.
Oh, my God.
Glad you could join us.
Thanks. Lovely to see you.
Well, it was, I get my laptop, but here I am.
Yeah, good.
With my fan of all my. Looks like I have. Well, it's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. We have another question here. I attended the retreat earlier this year. This is from Carly. It gave me confirmation that I was indeed receiving signs from my loved ones in the spirit world. Since then, when I see or feel a connection, I don't second guess and immediately say thank you. I say their name and give myself a hug as well. Could you talk about ways we can keep the conversation going with them? Melissa, you just mentioned that, you know, ways of keeping the conversation going. It's probably one of the most asked questions that we always get. You know, I was thinking maybe one day we should just compile a list of the most common questions that we've received over the past 20 years and do a show, maybe invite a couple of mediums on and get their perspective, you know, on these things, because everybody seems to know. So, well, you know, it's great that, you know, that Carly attended the retreat and that she feels a connection and she doesn't second guess. So, you know, sometimes I think that we may, I'd hate to use the word summon, but somehow our thoughts get impressed upon them. So they're invited to us, but sometimes I would imagine they're the instigators, you know, of the conversation and the communication. And what we always say is, like, there are things that you could do, like meditation and so forth, and altered states of consciousness, but you can't make it happen, right? I mean, maybe you guys can explain it better than I can.
I like Melissa's explanation. Go ahead.
Oh, what was my explanation?
Party.
Oh, refresh my memory.
When you're at a party.
Oh, yes. Well, that's something that I still holds true for me, that saying their name, the loved one's name aloud, often and sharing stories about them is so important because I feel that they lean in to listen. Similarly to when I've been at a party with Tom and he may be across the room and in one conversation and I'm on the other side of the room talking to other people. And I'll just say, you know, suddenly I hear my name mentioned and I like, what are they talking about? You know, they're talking about me. And similar for Tom, he might suddenly hear his name and leans in to listen. And I think that's how it is in spirit, that they hear their name and they lean in to listen.
So in answer to the question of how do you keep the communication going, you can keep it going. And maybe it's one-sided, unfortunately, but if you talk about them, talk to them, use their name, as Melissa says, they will hear that, whether they're able to send something back that you can understand. That's another question entirely. But as Bob said, if you meditate and put yourself in a place where you basically silencing your mind, it's not a matter of that they're not talking back to you. It's a matter that you're not hearing it because of the clutter that's in your mind all the time or in your brain.
I also think it's subtle because I've mentioned this before that I would do this when I was working and driving distances to where I had to be. I would speak, I recall mostly with my dad, and just within my mind ask a question. And a response would come, not as in thoughts, not in words. And it always was around right here, like the left side of my head. And again, it wasn't hearing words. It was like a knowing, like I'm being answered.
Yeah. Well, you know, Marty, you have told me many times about spontaneously hearing voices, you know, your parents for one. And you weren't inviting them in, right? It just happened.
No, in fact, there are times when I feel an overwhelming warmth. And I just know that someone is visiting me and someone close to me is telling me that I'm loved or that not to worry or to, or maybe that's you, Bob.
Yeah.
But
yes, 3 o'clock in the morning.
But I know that it's from another place, and because it's a very different feeling of knowing that someone is connecting with me, and it is unexpected. It's not any time when I'm saying, "Oh, please tell me, please tell me, please." Get in touch with me or let me know that you're there. But it's like when I'm driving sometimes and I'm just being very quiet, just watching, you know, driving. And I'll feel like a shiver go through my body. And it's really quite extraordinary because I know that someone is trying. And then I hear it out who it is, and sometimes even a song comes into my head that was associated with the person that I love, and my parents, for example, have a song that was an old fashioned style of song, and bam, it's in my brain, and and I say, okay, hi, how are you, and I have a little conversation.
I'm so glad you shared that. Oh, I'm sorry, Bob. I just wanted to say to Marta, that's a reminder to me that I've had those same experiences. I recall one years and years ago, I'd gone back to school as an adult student and driving at night to my night class. And all of a sudden, I had this same sensation of like a warm hug. And my interpretation of it was twofold. I took it to be, for some reason, my great aunt Polly, who had died years ago, but I associated it with her. But I also had the sensation of I'm in the right place at the right time. And then I had it again. I think it was back in 2006 or seven, when our son needed to find an apartment in Brooklyn. And I went ahead and was making plans to meet with a realtor. And I had to stand outside of a building waiting for that realtor to come and show me the apartment. But in the meantime, I was thinking, okay, you know, it hits all the spots that my son said he needed. And I felt a presence like Tom's dad there with me, with a warm hug of a stamp of approval. And again, that right place at the right time. So it was sort of a combination of feeling a loved one's presence, sort of giving their stamp of approval to what I was doing.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note also, because we're talking here about communication, and of course we're talking, we're expressing in words and sentences and that sort of thing, and reaching out to our loved ones and talking to them. And in a sense, we expect or hope that they will talk back to us. But what we have found in our research and evidence is the spirit world doesn't talk. They communicate telepathically. So rather than talking back to you, they are probably more capable of putting a thought in your head. Or, as Marta mentioned, giving you, they are also pure energy. So it's easier for them to surround you with warmth, the energy of a warm hug, that is what you're going to get. You're not going to get a conversation, but you will get a communication.
And sometimes I feel that there's a great sense of well-being.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, and you know, that always makes me comforted. And of course, but it doesn't come from asking. Just it, all of a sudden, it's there, like that warmth to it, and that feeling of everything is going to be all.
Yes.
Well, that makes sense, because like one of the most common elements of a near-death experience is that feeling of being surrounded by warmth and knowing that all is right, you know. So it's they find it very, very comforting. Of course, most of them are pissed off when they have to come back, but while they're there, that the overwhelming we've had short little bursts of being surrounded by love, but it's not sustainable most of the time, you know. So, but imagine being in an environment where, you know, that's the currency of life, you know. It's just everything is, you know, is love and compassion. So it's certainly something I think we all can look forward to. I mean, it doesn't happen, hopefully it won't happen right away, but where we're going.
Good enough.
Well, yeah. Sounds blissful.
Yeah, let's go on to another question. We said, let's see. My dad was the last of my nuclear family. When he passed in 2021, I meditated about the grief. I suddenly envisioned myself as a tiny baby in my crib. My dad and mom and my two sisters were all standing over the crib looking down at me with great love. They all looked the age that they would have been in 1958. They radiated love. The next thought I had was that they were telling me, "We were there when you were born and we'll be here when you cross over." It gave me great comfort. According to some belief structures, it is said that souls travel through time in groups and that we will be with our loved ones again in future lives. A few days ago, it gave me great comfort, there you go, to think of my family and to think, who will you be in my next life? It made me happy to think of being with them again, with curiosity about how they might have quite different roles in my life. Then she writes, P.S., in the 80s in grad school, I learned that Sigmund Freud said that all individuals actually know subconsciously when they're going to die, but that the knowledge is suppressed. Okay, so that there's a lot to unpack there. But again, that's reiterating what we said before, that feeling of great love. Her parents appearing at the age, you know, when they were younger, when they felt, you know, the best, you know, about themselves, which we hear often. We were there when you were born. We'll be here when you cross over. Most people, you know, we theorize that are met by their loved ones, usually family members, you know, so mom and dad, you know, would be there. So what about the notion of Sigmund Freud that we all know subconsciously when we're going to die, but that we put it on the back burner? You got any thoughts on that?
I don't know. Have you ever had those?
Well, personally, no. But it's hard to. I do think there is credence to that. In fact, I know people who have died young and have left behind writings, poetry, or that sort of thing. And the poetry, if you read it carefully, you see that there's a limited space that they're talking about when they're talking about their life. So subconsciously, I guess, yeah, you kind of do know, but you don't know. I mean, I don't imagine anybody would want to know. Well, on July 14th, 2050 is your day. I don't know if I would want to know that.
I don't think I've had a sense of that, which hopefully is a good thing. Like maybe there's, you know, maybe I've got a long ways to go. But I'll let you guys know if I suddenly have a sense or a knowing.
So I mean, it's a year ago that I had the quintuple bypass surgery, and I was, my widowmaker artery was totally blocked. So I was literally a heartbeat away from dropping dead. And when I was given this news, I didn't panic because I sort of innately knew, well, I'm not done yet. Yeah. This isn't my time. I felt that it wasn't my time. So I didn't go. I went into the surgery, of course, had it dealt with. But I had no fear that I wouldn't come out on the other side. I had no fear of it. I did prepare as if maybe I wouldn't, but I just didn't have a fear of it, and somehow I knew that it wasn't my time.
What did the doctor say to you after the surgery? Do you remember?
Well, he said that I was very chill. He says most of my patients are not chill.
Well, of course you were. You're a musician. What can you?
Yeah, that's right.
Before we go to another call, let's take a caller. We have a caller from Florida that wanted to share an experience. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. You're welcome to the show. You're on Signs of Life, The Gathering. Did you have something you wanted to share?
Yes. I wanted to ask a question. When you were talking just about having the spirits giving you a warm feeling or a hug, I've had many experiences. I've been told that I'm intuitive. And I had an experience that I was laying in bed. This has happened quite often. And somebody is getting into the bed next to me. And to me, I only felt like that could be my husband who passed. But I was wondering if you had any, you know, information or how you thought about that.
It's something that's reported a lot more than you think. I mean, it's a very common type of, you know, after death communication, where people, sometimes it's a vague sense of presence, and sometimes it's more than subtle, where you feel somebody touching your face, or you feel somebody getting into the bed next to you. I know that after my daughter passed, my wife thought, you know, that somebody had gotten onto the bed, and she looked, and there was indentation you know, on the bed, but didn't actually see her at that time. She saw her at a different time. So right. All these things of psychokinesis, the people in spirit being energy, and they could affect physical matter, you know, being us, like in the physical world. So we hear so many reports similar to that. You know, I mean, it very well could be your husband not only saying hello, but, you know, I mean, really doing something that's magical, you know, by you know, getting in bed with you and, you know, or touching you. So it's not something that you should even question. Just embrace it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I just interject one more thing?
Yeah.
The last time it actually happened to me, I was in a very agitated state. And I was sleeping, and I woke up feeling afraid. And I was laying there awake with my eyes closed, and I felt it again. And I just came out, and I didn't think it was my husband. I just came out and said, look, I have to get my sleep. I have to go to work tomorrow, so get lost. And I felt it again. I was in a really agitated state. I wasn't sleeping well. I had to go to work. I had to get up early. And I just did not think it was him. I didn't feel the same kind of comfort I felt when it happened before, but it made me almost a little scared. And I just came out with anger, and that's what I said. And since then, I haven't had it anymore.
Oh, good. So, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I know that some of our mediums, when we speak about inviting spirit to communicate, that they often speak about protecting themselves, like envisioning a white light coming down over you. So were this to happen again with an entity that you're not welcoming or you don't want, maybe practice that when you go to bed. But it doesn't, hopefully it won't occur again unless it's your husband and you're rested enough to appreciate it.
Yeah. And right. Also bear in mind, I mean, it could have been another acquaintance of yours. And also bear in mind, there's really no evidence that somebody in spirit that doesn't have a physical body has ever, you know, harmed somebody, you know, physically. You know, I mean, somebody could be inquisitive or mischievous or just wanting to see what it's like to be, you know, in a material existence again. But I'm not one that believes that, you know, you can be harmed by spirit. Usually, you know, 99% are visitations, you know, and not.
And you, yeah, I think you mentioned that you were intuitive.
That's true.
Yes.
Yes. So if your abilities are starting to progress and grow, then spirit will recognize that, and if they need to get a message to somebody else, even though it's somebody you don't know, they might come to you. So if this sort of thing happens, it may be a development of your intuitive skills, and what Melissa said is learning how to protect yourself with this, surrounding yourself with the white light would become very important for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Yeah. It was just because I got so scared, I went into a fight mode, I would think, to blurt out what I blurted out, and I was just so angry everything that was happening, and I did need to get up to go to work early, so it came out as a mean thing, and I said to myself afterwards in the morning, I said, oh my goodness. If that was my husband, I'm sorry, you know, because I just felt scared. I didn't feel the calmness, as I said. I don't think it was because I didn't feel that calmness when it happened before.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I think so. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm truly enjoying the conversation.
And thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now.
You know, when I was a child, I, I was adopted when I was five, and but I always felt these strange, I don't know, white figures going around me, and I was terrified. But I wish that now that I had thought differently. I wish that someone had said to me, "Don't be afraid, you know, just accept it and know that they're there just to visit you and to be a part of your life and to comfort you." We talked about comforting before. That would have made a huge difference. Instead, I was so scared, and I was always hiding under the covers, and I had to cover my whole self so that I wouldn't be touched by whatever I was seeing. But I think it was, people that I had, that had died, that had known me or known about me and were trying to connect with me. I was so young, so it's hard to tell, but I didn't know what was happening really, but I saw them and it was scary. It was spooky to me, and spooky, I think, is the right word.
Yeah, I think, and that's understandable as a child. But you know, that fear of the unknown continues. You know, in the adult population, it's something that we're trying to help with. You know, because it's a product of our environment, and or maybe even our educators and society and culture and the movies, and we're all taught to be afraid of things that we can't perceive with our known senses. I mean, I've told this before, but I'll just say it again quickly because it's apropos. Had a woman that was at one of our grief retreats 10 years ago, and I said to her on the side, you know, what would it take? You know, what would it take for you to believe that your daughter still existed? And she said, "Bob, if I could see my daughter, then I would know. And then, you know, I would believe beyond the shadow of a doubt." And then I hadn't seen her, and she reappeared at a grief retreat that was about 8 years later. And she came up to me and she said, "Bob, do you remember that conversation that we had 8 years ago?" And "No, I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday." But then she said, "Well, you asked me what it would take for me to know that my daughter still existed. And I told you that if I saw her, I would know." And she said, "Well, I saw my daughter." And I said, "Wow, that's amazing." She said, "Yes, she appeared at the foot of my bed." I said, "And what happened?" And she said, "It scared the shit out of me. And I screamed and she disappeared." And, you know, I'm like, my God, you know, just that's what Marta was saying. Her daughter jumped through hoops, so to speak, to be able to manifest herself in physical form and visit her mom that she loved. And that fear took over, you know, instead of being so thankful to the universe for it occurring, she kind of made her daughter disappear. So I just use that as an example. Here's somebody that wanted more than anything else in life to see it, and then it happens, and fear takes over. So we have to get over that.
Yeah, and that's perfect, because this whole conversation started with a question of how can I have more communication, and because that very reason, spirit wants to comfort you and love you and tell you that you're there all right. The last thing they want to do is scare you.
Right.
So it's very difficult for them to get through to you without the fear element. And that's what's holding up communication. If we were less fearful, probably we'd have more communication.
Yeah. Here's another question, under the category, you know, that most often, and Wesley says, "My husband Kyle took his life November 25th, 2023. I'd like to know what happens to souls that die by suicide. I can't make sense of this tragedy." And of course, I mean, how do you make sense of it? I mean, you really can't. But what comes along with the families of loved ones who take their own lives is that you know, the feelings of guilt, and could they have changed things? And we have to understand that in most cases, you know, suicide is an illness. It's a mental illness. Most often it's depression. People feel hopeless. They see no way out. You know, it's just like any other disease. And as to what happens to them, the same thing that happens to everybody else. They wind up in a dimension with other people of like mind, you know, depending on the life that you lived here. And there's progression, and, you know, it's you got to get away from the religious explanations that they're doomed to go to some lower, you know, it's just, that's not the way it is, you know. So so I wouldn't, you know, I mean, you got enough to beat yourself up over. I mean, that's not one of them. I mean, they're in a good place. They'll continue to move towards the light and be enlightened. So I think we all agree on that, right?
Well, I think they're surrounded by love and compassion and understanding.
Yeah.
And so those of us left behind with all these, that's the saddest part. Those of us left behind to wonder and worry and regret, and that just goes along with every death.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to another call. We have Steve from North Carolina. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Good. How are you? You and I met in Fort Myers a couple months ago.
Yeah. Well, how you been?
Great, great, and really got a lot out of the retreat in Fort Myers. My question has to do with the soul.
Yeah.
What do we, whatever it is that we're going to call this thing that survives death, it seems to have consciousness and intelligence. And in my experience, it also seems to have the same personality as the person who passed. But I'm wondering, what else do we know about it? For example, do souls break up? Is, you know, could you have the same soul in two or three people, or is it always, you know, like one soul to a person? What do we know, or what do we believe?
Well, I mean, the first thing, like what it is, I mean, we believe that the soul is consciousness. So, I use the terms mind, consciousness, and soul interchangeably, although the soul has more of a spiritual connotation to it. But so it's consciousness that survives. And as you mentioned, it does survive with both memory and personality intact, which means, and we know this not only from channel writings, but from mediums. Sometimes the mediums can take on the personality of the discarnated entity, and they mention things that happened in the past, so which shows that they have memory. And I know Tom could speak about this too, and he will, but the soul can be fragmented. You know, we have an oversoul, which is made up of many individual, you know, souls, and we can, because the souls are entities of consciousness, and consciousness can be everywhere all at once. It could be dispersed. You can be reincarnated, and a medium could still communicate with the other part of the soul that was in this physical world. Tom, you want to pick up from there?
Yeah, it reminds me again, I've mentioned this often, but there is a series of writings called Seth Speaks, which is a couple that had channeled this entity, Seth, who tells a story of all of this, and he describes your soul as kind of like the head of an octopus, and it has tentacles going all out, and at the end of one tentacle is you here on Earth today, and another tentacle could be a different kind of you in 1700s, and so yes, there can be multiple existence of the soul. One thing that you mentioned on the phone call, which I thought was interesting, is there one soul per person? I think yes, in a physical sense, you only have the one soul that's in your body. maybe somebody can, well, what if schizophrenic? Maybe there are two souls trying to use the same body at the same time. But for the most part, yeah, the one, you have the one soul and you've got the one body, but there may be a lot of other bodies that that soul can inhabit at the same time.
Always over my head. I believe you guys, but it's always too much for me to process.
Well, I know you had a couple of other questions that you mentioned, Steve. One was, does the deceased care about their burial? I think that they could care less about their bodies because they're not their bodies. So what happens to their bodies is of no concern. However, they may be interested in seeing who's gathering and talking about them, because these are people that they loved when they were in the physical. So I would think that there would be some interest in that. But, you know, in terms of, like, when I see all these ghost hunting shows and they all gather in the cemeteries, I don't get that, because, you know, I mean, only their bodies are there. They're not there, you know, so I don't see why they would stay at or visit a cemetery, but, you know, that's me. And the other thing I saw that in the chat that you had mentioned, which is something that I thought about really hard for a long time. I mean, you mentioned we spend our whole lives learning life lessons, but it seems we forget them after we're reborn. Why? So I used to think about that too, Steve, and I used to say, okay, I'll buy that I came back to learn a life lesson, but I have no idea what that lesson is. So it seemed to me like a cruel joke. How am I supposed to learn the lesson if I don't know what it is, what lesson it is that I'm to learn? But I think, as Tom would probably tell you, we're thinking in physical terms. I think on a spiritual level, our oversoul knows, you know, eventually when we're on the other side, we'll have a clearer picture. But you guys agree with that?
We're humans here. We're just finding our way. But then on the other side, like you just said, Bob, what do you think, Tom?
Well, this is interesting because I am currently reading a book by a psychologist, Dr. Michael Newton, called The Journey of Souls. And it talks about what the soul experiences between lives, after you're dead and before you reincarnate. And yes, you live your life, and you make mistakes, and then you go, you die, and you're met by guides who help you evaluate that life. And gone, well, geez, I made an awful lot of mistakes. And it's like, well, maybe you should go back and try again. And so there is that. And it's what your soul brings with you to the new life is what you need. You don't, you're taking another test. Going back on to the earth is a test to see if you've learned from your last life. And of course, they're not going to give you the answers to the test. You have to take the test on your own and figure it out for yourself. And then when you're done, did you pass the test or not? And then you get to the next life and you say, well, I'm closer, but I have to go back again. And eventually you get to a point where I did it. You know, I've raised myself to a new level. And then you go to the next level of existence.
Well, what can they explain in the book? Does anyone say, no, I'm good? Whatever I just completed.
Yeah, they talk about the souls that have been around 9 or 10 lives and have gotten it right. Yeah, they don't get to sit down with the teacher on the guide at the other side, examining everything, because they're there and they zip on to the next level.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I hope we answered some of your questions, but good talking with you, and thanks for calling in.
Yes, you did. And the answers are all very helpful. So thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Take care, Steve.
I have one thing to ask, and about what we were just talking about, because I've had recently so much deja vu feelings that I've done this. I know I have. It's not a matter of guessing, but it is a matter that I've been there, and I've been through the same motions. I've said the same thing. I've had the same drink. Maybe don't say too much to me, but like coffee. And, but it's you know, but it's somewhat confusing to me, because I think, well, maybe it happened in another life. Maybe I'm just, you know, redoing the same thing I did last time, but trying to be better at it. And or maybe it's just a matter of deja vu, doing something that was similar to what I've done. But
yeah, I think sure. We all battle with the same questions that you just outlined. You know, I mean, I have these experiences and dreams, and sometimes they repeat and repeat, and I'm in a place that I know I've been to a million times, but I haven't, not in this physical life. So is it precognition? Have I seen something that I may visit in the future? Is it something that I visited in the past and don't remember? Is it reincarnation and I went there in the past life? Or, you know, deja vu, just connected to that place, you know, telepathically? I don't know. But when you figure it out, please let me know, because I'd love to.
All over again. Deja vu all over again.
Yeah, deja vu all over again. Yeah. I know we're pressed for time, but you made me think when you mentioned that about, you know, coming back. By the way, I interviewed Michael Newton years ago, just before he died, and he's a really interesting guy. But yeah. But you made me think when you just said that. So what happens if you're dying and you have a near death experience and you're told, you know, it's not your time and you got to go back, and you just say, nope,
yeah,
not doing it. Nope.
Never.
What happens then?
You find yourself back in your body. And as you say, most people are in that spot or pissed.
Yeah.
At one of our retreats, an event we had, and one of the custodians came up to me. I was sitting out at the merch desk, and he says, "Can I tell you a story?" And he tells a story about sitting on his front porch with his dad and then having a seizure and dropping dead right there on the porch. And he said, you know, as soon as that happened, he saw his childhood dog come running for him. He felt that warm, beautiful, loving thing. He said everything was as beautiful as could be. The next thing he knows, his father is shaking his body, and he's back on Earth, and he was annoyed. He said, "Why'd you take me back? I loved it there." So I don't think you have a choice. If it's not your time, you're not going.
I agree.
So when I say nope, they're just going to say, "Bob, going back." Okay, so right now it's time for our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to remind everyone, our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
Well, thank you, everyone. And thanks to our listeners. And we'll talk to you on the next show. Have a good evening.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Have a good one.